Welcome to episode 36 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this afternoon, we keep changing. We are here to discuss season 2, episode 11, which is titled Perpetual Infinity. But before we get started with that, we've got some feedback from last week's episode, which is season 2, episode 10, The Red Angel. So I'm going to open hailing frequencies. Okay, so we've got some feedback from Sven. Ruthie, you want to take this one?
Okay, Sven says, Sven from Berlin. Hi, Trekkers. This was a great episode. I give an 8.5 out of 10 mums. That's funny. His yeses are, what great acting when Michael learns about the truth of her parents' death. Sonequa's best until now. I love the mother twist at the end because it made no sense to me that Michael was the Red Angel. If she were, she would have known that it was a trap. And yes, the bond between Giorgio and Michael is as interesting as it is disturbing. At least when you remember that the former emperor was a Kelpian eating bitch. True enough, Sven. His nose.
Nothing held back there, Sven.
I know, right? Tell us how you really feel. His nose were Tilly's way over the top makeup at the funeral. Colbert running around like a gigolo the whole time. And I am sorry, Peck's robotic acting. Looking forward to the conclusion at the end while being sad about Anson Mount's departure. Live long and prosper, everybody. Sven from Berlin.
Peck's robotic acting, huh?
I didn't think it was robotic, but hey.
Well, he is playing a Vulcan, or should I say, half Vulcan science officer Spock.
You can say that.
Yes, I can. Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people criticized Michael Burnham, or should I say Sonequa Martin-Green, for the same kind of thing, especially in season one. So, I don't know. I don't agree with you on that point, but love the point about Giorgio.
I feel pretty much the same way. I mean, I think people a lot of times have those kinds of criticisms about actors who are playing Vulcans, but I'm just not sure they really understand the nuances in the performances personally. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Not that Ruthie's saying that you don't follow the nuances, but I get the point there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't know why people always say it. Seems like that is a standard criticism for people.
It is, yeah.
Who are playing Vulcans. They're so robotic. I'm like, well, they're not robotic, actually. They're playing someone who doesn't have emotions. So, I mean, it would be different if they were actually playing a robot, but it's kind of like that's what they're doing. So,
yeah. I've always looked at it as they have emotions, but not on the surface. They're deeply seated, repressed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very, very hidden.
Yes.
And not to be shared with very many people.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sven. We'll hear more from you later on in the podcast.
Ooh.
We also have feedback from Donna from... I'm not sure where, Donna, where you're from. I didn't
from
see
somewhere.
anything to tell me for sure.
It's Donna from the World Wide Web.
Yeah. Somewhere in the United States, I think.
Somewhere in the world, on this planet. We're pretty sure on this planet.
Well, you know what? I will follow what they say on the Talking Dead podcast and say Donna from the internet.
Donna from the internet. I like that too.
Yeah. All right. Well, she has some yeses for last week. She says, I like the interactions between Spock and Michael. The writing is good and the actors have great chemistry. they seem to have established some peace. It's interesting that he's the one person who is truly committed to seeing this through at the end and ultimately having her back. I think that solidifies their bond. Oh, and props to all the actors and their nonverbal communication throughout the series. Yes, I agree. And then she has nose, or she put in brackets, or confused. Did anyone think there was some extraneous scenes that were out of place or maybe not even necessary? Not sure what she meant about that. Then she says, I was leaving the whole episode thinking, what just happened? I definitely need a rewatch. Well, I don't know if you got a rewatch, Donna, or not, but be curious to see what you think after that. And we have an errata this week.
Ruh-roh.
And it's not just an errata that we've said, but it's an errata that everyone has said.
Color me intrigued.
Incorrect.
Okay, so we have incorrects. And that has to do with the time crystal. Believe it or not, the time crystal is actually a thing.
Ooh.
All right, so I looked it up, and according to Wikipedia, a time crystal was first described by Nobel Prize winner Frank Wilczek in 2012. A more precise definition was developed later and actually first synthesized in labs in 2016 and described in Nature magazine in 2017. But basically, it is a structure that repeats in time as well as space. Normal three-dimensional crystals have a repeating pattern in space, but remain unchanged as time passes. Time crystals repeat themselves in time as well, leading the crystal to change from moment to moment. A time crystal never reaches thermal equilibrium, as it is a type of non-equilibrium matter. This state of matter cannot be isolated from its environment. It is an open system in non-equilibrium. And supposedly, like I said, 2017, it sounded like those crystals existed for like nanoseconds, like a very, very, very short amount of time. So even though it's something that we can do in the 2010s, in the 23rd century, you could finally actually have one that is stable enough to wear on a suit, I guess. So I guess that's the thing. I would say, you know, well, we would have appreciated a more, you know, tachyon crystal or something, but time crystal is a thing. So our criticisms of it to say, hey, you know, what, couldn't you come up with a better name? Well, that's mood anymore because that's the name.
The name. That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I love the fact that, you know, the writers are actually ahead of the, in that way, of the fans, because the fans are so quick to criticize, but it's kind of like, aha, not true. Not true. Yeah. Anyway, so I thought I'd share that. So, all right. So let's move on into this week's episode, season 2, episode 11, which is titled Perpetual Infinity. It is written by Alan McElroy and Brandon Schultz, and McElroy co-wrote the fourth episode of this season, An Obol for Charon, and he goes back a very long time, has had a very distinguished career writing screenplays and TV shows. His first credit goes back to Halloween 4 in 1988, so he's been doing it for a while. Brandon Schultz has been a writer's assistant on the show since season 1. So, and it is directed by Maya Vervillo. Okay, so she actually has a lot of credits as an editor as well as a director. And as far as Star Trek, her credits go back to the first short Trek, the Tilly one, Runaway. She directed that. But this is her first direction of Star Trek Discovery episode, if you want to separate the two. The description from CBS.com is as follows. Burnham receives the reunion she's been longing for, but it doesn't go quite as she imagined. Giorgio and Tyler sense a disturbing change in Leland.
Is it a disturbance in the force?
Yes, I was thinking of that myself. I was thinking of that myself. And to that I would say,
it's not true. That's impossible.
But it could be true.
Yeah, Luke, I think it's very possible. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And that had the rating of TV-14 with violence and, of course, was released March 28th.
Violence.
As far as our spot, the 47, I did not see any 47s. Now, there is one place where there could be a 47, but I couldn't make one out. And that is when they are describing how much has been transferred over to the Section 31 ship. Mm. It's described, I think Spock describes it as 45%, 46, and then you're waiting for 47 and it never comes.
But it never got there, huh?
It may exist on screen, but I didn't find it. So, All right, Ruthie, if you could give this a rating, arbitrary or not, what would you give Perpetual Infinity?
My arbitrary rating, because I don't like to compare them between themselves, because I can never remember what I gave last week that I really liked or the week before that maybe I was on. I'm going to say this one is a 9.37.
9.37. Interesting. Yep. That's pretty close to what I was going to give it. So I'm going to give it a 9.3. Mistaken Prime Universe counterparts.
Mistaken Prime Universe counterparts. That's funny.
I'd also give it 9.3 Tug of Wars Before the Universe Wins.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. All right. So we have some listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start?
All righty. Brian from Hawaii says 10 out of 10 Laws of Physics. My first perfect score for Discovery.
Interesting. James says, I'm giving Perpetual Infinity 8.75 I Like Sciences. And he says, insert small grins here. I will put this in. How about this, James? I don't know if it deserved a clap.
Sure, why not?
All right.
Okie dokie. All right. LT from NC says, my rating is 9.0 Kung Fu Fighting Philippas or 9 Cyber Lelands. Nice.
Sven from Berlin gives it 9 out of 10 Destroyed Time Crystals.
Nice. William.
I couldn't find where he's from either.
I was going to say, I don't know if he's from anywhere specifically, but that last name looks pretty Irish to me. So I was going to say William the Irish says. William the Irish says, I'm giving this episode a perfect 10 out of 10 Isaac Newton channelings, or should I say 10 out of 10, I'm channeling my inner Isaac Newtons. Either one.
Yeah, either one. Mark from Ontario, Canada. I picked that from your voicemail, Mark. It's like, we never called you that, but it's like, that's what you always refer to yourself as in the voicemail. So that's what you are. He gives us 8.5 doctors reinstated 5 minutes ago. I like that one.
Yeah. Okay. Mike from Cleveland says, I think I'm going to borrow an arbitrary 9 from Ruthie and give this episode a 9 out of 10. Therapists agree with having to juggle feeling for Mama Burnham, Mama Amanda, and Mama Giorgio. There's no way possible Michael will not be emotionally crippled by mommy issues. I cannot disagree with that.
Yeah. The next show by Alex Kurtzman will be the Star Trek spinoff, My Three Mamas.
My Three Mommies. That's funny. Yeah. My Three Mommy Issues.
Yeah. Fred from the Netherlands gives it 7.5. Michael cries beautifully, but way too much. Way too much. Fred.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
Anyway.
Fred, I think you don't really understand what a lot of crying is. Trust me. Now, is it the number of times? Is that a lot? Or is it the number of tears or something? Because it's still no on both of those.
I believe I believe if we ask him, he will give us a scene by scene visual representation of this.
I have no doubt that that's true, but I just want to know, what is a lot of crying? Is it like one big boohoo fit, or is it many times with a few tears or something? I just don't know what way too much is. But in any case, still wrong, Fred. You're wrong. But only a little bit.
All right, next.
Todd from Indianapolis says 9.5. Thank you for being very succinct.
And Cyberbam got this one in, thankfully, just before we started recording. So we were late in starting today. So actually, anyway.
Late from last night.
Late from last night. She gives it 8 poor Lelands.
No doubt, man. That looked painful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right. So let's move on to some yeses.
Yes.
And it makes me wonder if a descendant of Wesley Crusher was involved in those nanoprobes.
Oh, gosh.
Nanites, nanoprobes, or...
Nano something.
I'm sure someone in here will mention the Borg. So.
Yeah.
All right. Our first one is Brian from Hawaii. He says, Spock's epiphany, why he is unique, and later excitedly saying, I like science, which he says is one of the best quotes in Discovery yet. I agree with that. Dr. Burnham alluding to Pike's future that he won't like. Yeah, I like that too. View of nanoprobes in Leland's blood. Martin Green's superb acting and facial expressions. Giorgio deciding to save the universe and protect Michael. Spock's pep talk and reconciliation with Michael and starting a new game of chess.
Word. All right. James says, did anyone else notice a subtle nod to Ridley Scott's Alien in the cold open? The stark white coloring and geometrical shapes within the Burnham's quarters creating the sense of peace prior to horrific events unfolding within was very reminiscent of the opening sequence aboard the Nostromo.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Catch.
That was a nice catch, although I don't know that I can say that I know what you're talking about. Anyway, Giorgio seeing through Control Leland's deception in the nick of time and kicking some ass.
By the way, James, I like the compound use of Control Leland into a single word.
Me too. Very nice. Very good. The performance of Sonia John portraying Dr. Burnham. James says, and this is kind of a Mad Lib thing here, I suppose, you can really blank the anguish and hopelessness that she has and why she wouldn't want to see Michael, as it makes it all the worse for her. As well as her reveal is watching her from a distance in crucial moments of her life and being filled with love, but feeling she can't lose sight of what she's trying to accomplish. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to say maybe you meant you can really see the anguish and hopelessness. And also, it's Sonia's son.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
Yeah.
According to all the sources, IMDb.
Yeah.
Et cetera. All right. His final yes is Spock's subtle way of setting up a chessboard to help Michael refocus on what's to come and reinstilling a sense of hope. I guess chess is really cathartic. I suppose if you like chess, it is.
Certainly within that family.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. LT from NC is next. He says, the exchange between Saru and Tilly on the bridge when he cut her off and the look Mary Wiseman gave afterwards reminded me of how Michael and Saru bantered on the Shenzhou in the first episode. Well, glad you liked that one. I mentioned that one later. Then he says, my feeling when I saw a still alive, survived the eye poke Leland strapped to the chair, chatting with the hologram, and the idea of a nanite-controlled, Borg-like controlled captain. The Leland / Terminator shootout at the end. Where did that phaser rifle come from?
No doubt.
obviously a Section 31 prototype or something. Maybe if Michael would have had one of those in the Section 31 base. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's a Section 31 thing.
Mm.
I think that's a control thing.
Maybe.
That's a control. I need to defeat the Red Angel thing because it sure was aimed directly at that.
Yeah.
Yes, that shootout was awesome.
It was.
Pretty fantastic. I'm not quite sure that Giorgio's ever had her butt whooped before.
Yeah, but man, she was fighting.
Oh, know? She was. She yeah. was giving him the business, that's for sure. It was definitely, she was awesome. Okay, Sven from Berlin says, the bird of prey in Michael's flashback with her parents. What? How cool is that design? What a shame it was only for a mere seconds. Philippa's, I get my thrills in other ways.
And of course, you know, we use that later.
What?
Well, sometimes we do. Sometimes we do.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And last is Mike from Cleveland. He says, Leland is killing Tyler. No silly CW relationship for Burnham.
Yeah. Poor Michael. So sad. I don't think he's dead, though.
No.
I mean, if Leland can survive a poke to the eye brain like that, then I feel like he can survive a stab to the whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to be back.
Me too.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
All right. So that's it for listener guesses. Ruthie, what do you have for yes?
Well, I have some that many people have already mentioned because, of course, it was awesome. When Spock said, I like science.
Yep.
That was pretty fantabulous and hilarious because sometimes when you say things deadpan, it's funny.
Yeah.
Even though I'm sure he was not intending to be humorous, that's what makes it funny. Anyway, I wanted to know, this isn't really, I mean, this is kind of a yes, but my yes is a question. What is Tilly's favorite law? I really want to know now.
That is a good question. Albeit that the bringing up of Tilly's favorite law, not appropriate at a time.
Yeah, but still, that whole thing was funny to me.
It is funny, yeah.
Because she's so easily, like, I don't know, just...
Squirrel!
Yeah, but not only that, it's like, I'm not going to let the whole enormity of the situation turn me into a ball of nerves or whatever, you know, blubbering... Can't function because it's too much kind of a thing. Nope, she can easily focus on, hey, that's my second favorite law or whatever she said. I can't remember. But yeah, so it's like, oh, what's your first? Because that would have been my response had I been on the bridge or wherever they were. I can't remember. I would have been like, oh, what's your first favorite? And of course, because I am also easily distracted.
Yes, I am as well. So
squirrels.
Yeah.
It's a good thing we're not captains.
Yeah. All right, so what else you got before I have to pull Blaine in?
Haha. I liked the ending with the chess game. I thought that was very appropriate and, as has already been mentioned, a good way to refocus her. I thought that was really cool. And very, like, kind of in the same way that ending having the end credits of the Ocean Sounds, I thought that was kind of just... And, like, the very last scene is her picking up a piece. It was kind of very bringing it all back around kind of thing. And once again, I have to give mad props to Sonequa Martin-Green. She is just killing it with every single episode, I think. I mean, just what she can do with her face. I'm like, is your face made of rubber or something? Like, how do you get it to do all that stuff? She just is able to show, that's not my mom. And that whole thing that you can just, I know exactly what she's feeling just by looking at her face. She doesn't even have to say the words. I just know. I'm like, it's like, no, you're lying to me. That can't be what happened. My mom died. I heard it. I know what I experienced. Blah, 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 blah. All that kind of stuff just from her facial muscles.
Yeah.
And stuff. And her brain, obviously. But yeah, she's awesome. She's amazing. She gets all of the yeses all the time. She is my favorite with Tilly. I love Tilly.
And I would agree. And I find it very frustrating that there's still people out there that don't give her the credit that she deserves for this. I mean,
those people are dumb.
I mean, I said way back in around the time of the Short Treks, I think maybe even for one of the roundtable we did. I don't remember exactly when I brought this up, but back in November, she did a cameo back on The Walking Dead, and her very appearance on there made me like cry like a baby. Like, and it had nothing to do with Sasha. It was 99% my reaction to her as Burnham that caused that. And I would probably openly weep on the street if I saw her because she's, I totally agree with you. She is so amazing in this role. And yeah, she conveys so much with her face that it's just brilliant. And I hope that more people have realized that, you know, like I say that because last week she was the guest on the Ready Room and she was on there and I was reading, you know, the comments that were on Facebook and like 90% of the, not even 90, 99% of the people that commented back were just raving about her. But there's still, you know, one little troll on there, you know, saying that she's terrible. She doesn't know how to act. She's expressionless. It's like, duh.
Those people are stupid. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they are. They are.
She is an artist at the height of her craft.
And she is doing such a wonderful job. I think she learned so much from Andrew Lincoln as far as running a show. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, I shouldn't say running a show. That's a different term. But
being
basically
a
captaining a show or
the lead.
Yeah. She, everything I've heard, you know, in interviews that other people have given, talk about what the, you know, how they stay together, you know, even off season, how they do all these like game nights and all this stuff together. Like it's very much a family in Toronto when they're shooting. And it's very much a family, like even, you know, when they're off season. It just, to me, like I say, she learned the lessons that Andrew Lincoln taught her in his role, a similar role on The Walking Dead, because it's the same kind of stories we heard when we were covering The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. About him. So everything that I had for a yes has been said. I'll just convey something that it was mentioned, just like the fighting of Michelle Yeoh. It's like, if mm-hmm. you're going to have Michelle Yeoh in a Star Trek series, you'd better have her fight. And the shots that they're doing, and like there's this one, it's like almost like a slow-mo where we see her like hit and then kind of pose. I love that. I just love that. It was so cool. But it's if you were a fan of her martial art movies work, clearly there's something here for you. And anyway, she's so good in the role. And I loved that scene between Giorgio and Dr. Burnham that I kind of alluded to, where she said, "You must be mistaking me for my Prime Universe counterpart." So she said Prime Universe. Interesting. She actually referred to this as Prime Universe, just like the fans do. Mm-hmm. But I love that Dr. Burnham knew she loved Burnham. She loves, you know, mm-hmm. Michael Burnham. And
right. It's obviously a very complicated love, though.
It's very...
I think it's complicated for Giorgio because it's hard for her to understand it, because love in and of itself is selfless.
Yes.
Basically. And it's hard for someone like her to be selfless, I guess. There are other kinds of love, but those aren't really love. Those are things like obsession and the other kinds of destructive types of thing that people think is love, but it's not really love.
Yeah.
Because if you love someone, you want them to be happy regardless of what happens to you.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I agree. And I also liked, I have to throw this in there, I also appreciated the style of fighting that yes. they had for her, because I feel like a lot of times there are these 90-pound women, not that Michelle Yeoh is 90 pounds, but there are these 90-pound women who are throwing around these 200-pound men that I'm like, I don't really think that's the way it would work.
Yeah.
And such things, you know, I mean, like, there are two things to fighting: be able to hit and get hit. So if you can't hit someone or at least cause some type of damage, then it doesn't really matter. And if someone is twice your size, then you have to have the ability to, you have to, you can't just throw a punch. In other words, yeah. You have to like be able to cause damage other than just your own physical strength. And the style of being able to use momentum and gravity and that kind of stuff to accomplish that. Because obviously he's got some kind of superhuman something or other going on with his nano something stuff. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I'm going to give a second yes to actually the, to Alan Van Sprang, who is playing Leland. I think this is a complicated part for him, especially mm-hmm. now. And I think he's really doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's interesting to watch. I'm wondering if he's going to, will he stay a part of things? Like, will he survive this or is he gone? Or, you know, I'm curious as to how he's going to survive this or if he's going to survive this. But even if he doesn't, I think the portrayal is pretty interesting at this point.
Like, will they be able to extract control?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
My whole thing is, how exactly does one survive such a thing? I mean, it kind of looked like his vascular system was replaced with.
Yeah.
Instead of blood, he's got some other something in there or something.
Yeah.
I don't really know. But I mean, how nano are these nanos? Because they obviously made a little bit of an appearance in one scene specifically. And obviously in the other scene, they were doing some stuff that was really that, you know, Tyler could see quite plainly. That was very obvious. But, you know, when he had the like kind of like did the ripply thing on his skin or whatever, and it showed the black stuff kind of moving around or whatever.
Yeah.
How many nanites, if we're going to just call them that, I'm going to call them that. How many nanites does one have to have in their blood? Or in their body to show up like that.
I don't know.
You know? And how does a human being still move and breathe and talk and stuff if they have all those in there instead of, or maybe not instead of, but just all that stuff in there? I mean, they basically, that thing punctured his spinal column.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know.
It's crazy.
And, you know, he got
crazy
shot.
Crazy and creepy.
He got shot very close to the heart in a shot that I think a normal person would have literally got shot directly through the heart. Like it would have went in one end, out the other.
Yeah.
And yet not only did he survive it, but the hole closed up. So it's like, what the hell is going on with him? It's pretty damn interesting. So,
yeah, pretty crazy.
Anyway. All right.
Yeah.
Shall we move
Pretty on? Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. Yeah, sure.
All right. So that's it for our yeses. Let's move on to our noes.
No!
All right. I'm Brian's namesake, so I'm going to say Brian from Hawaii, since I said we had that thing about namesake. Weak explanation by Culber how maternal DNA made mother-daughter neural signatures look the same. Yes. In fact, there is some discussion about this in the voicemails. So we'll hear more about this from someone who knows, a.k.a. All right. Fred.
A.k.a. our Fred from the Netherlands.
Yes. Leland's body somehow regenerating like the T-1000. He's still biological, even if he is taken over by control. The Red Angel Suit's quantum computing technology from 20 years ago has near infinite onboard storage, but Arium's presumably more recent technology was quite limited. That's a good question. And Section 31's ship conveniently masking its warp field to escape. Yeah, I thought that was a bit weak myself. It's like, really? You can't? That's all you need to do to escape? It's like, why haven't they done that before?
Mm.
Yeah, but your point about Arium's, literally, she has to delete stuff. I would have to agree with that. It was a limitation there, and especially when you compare it to others, it seems kind of arbitrary.
Yeah.
All right. Next, unless you have something to say about it.
No, but I agree. It does seem kind of fit for the story rather than fit for logic or whatever. Okay. James says, while they returned Terra Lysian's relevance to the season, it didn't offer explanation as to how Dr. Burnham transported the church and people. It also completely ignores the hole in Spock's pattern of Michael being in danger there. The appearance didn't save Michael from danger, but actually put her in it. This is still really sticking in my craw and bothersome for some reason.
You know,
bothersome because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I had this in my nose initially until I saw you mention it. I agree with that one. How did she do that? Like, we don't see any ability to transport anything. So it's just simply her and whoever. So I don't know. And does the suit allow her to be able to go 50,000 light years without really trying? Is this like another spore drive kind of thing? Yeah, I didn't get that either, I have to admit.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I didn't really understand. There were some things that I was like, what?
Although I am glad that we are seeing the relevance of Terra Lysian being explained, you know, that basically Dr. Burnham was the one that put them there. And, you know, clearly they're going to go back there for whatever reason, it seems.
Yeah, but why? Why did she do that? That's what I don't. There are a lot of things that I was like, why? Why would that?
Well, it seemed like what she was trying to do is change the future. So.
So
by her being able to
altering certain things.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
I gotcha. I can't think too hard about time travel stuff because it makes my head hurt. Because then you get into, well, was it always like that? Or if time is fluid, then how come it wasn't something else confusing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. I agree with that.
Anyway, James also says, the fact that it took Giorgio so long to figure out control Leland's deception, it seemed to make Leland just way too confident, decisive, and in command. I know it kind of planted a small seed in her at first, but the way we've seen Giorgio act, she usually tends to be more perceptive, and I feel she would have seen through it right away, the way control Leland was coming across. I agree.
Yeah.
I also had an incident of I don't know if I want to go so far as to call it a no, but it's at least a hold your horses, I think. I have a couple of those, I think, this time around. Anyway, yeah, I agree. I think it took too long for her to, I mean, honestly, she's kind of been suspecting him of something the entire time, and it did seem out of character for her to suddenly kind of back off. I mean, maybe she wouldn't have necessarily jumped straight to, oh, well, obviously, control's taken over his body. I mean, that seems kind of far-fetched, right? But I think that she should have noted and maybe watched more the way that he was behaving and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. All right. LT from NC says, I guess the longer Mom Burnham was in containment, the mellower she got. Just how she seemed to be very angry in the beginning and got mushier as it went on. I think it was kind of like she had like a specific direction in mind. You know, she wanted things to go a certain way. And when they didn't go her way, then she started, you know, reacting. And I think she was pretty salty there at first, especially with Burnham, when she came down to speak to her mother. And she, I think as time went on and things didn't go as planned, she kind of, and yet she could see that they were trying to help her. She finally dropped her guard down and, you know, was truthful with Burnham. And I didn't mention in my yeses, I probably should have, the fact that Mama Burnham had been monitoring basically Michael Burnham throughout her whole life. And I thought that was, I think that's what a mom would do. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah. I agree. There, but in the background.
Yeah. I wondered how she was able to do that. But.
Well, I mean, if all of time is available to you.
Yeah. But how would she observe?
And all you got to do is pop in.
Yeah.
Well, pop in and look at stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you observe stuff now?
You
go up and look at stuff.
Yeah, you lurk.
Yeah, that's right. Lurk. You become a lurker.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, she could have been looking at footage or something crazy, whatever, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to let you take this next one.
Sven from Berlin. Sven from Berlin says, Spock, I like science. Okay, maybe a yes as well. What? You can't have that as a yes and a no.
Yeah, what's your
it's clearly
no?
a yes.
Yeah, what's no about that?
Yeah, it was funny.
I liked it.
Yeah, Sven, explain yourself.
And here's another one that needs some explanation, because if you remember what Mike said in his yeses, I'll just take you back to it.
Okay.
Leland is, sorry, we have
Wayne's World.
Wayne's World. Leland is killing Tyler. No silly CW relationship for Burnham. This is followed in the nose by, darn it, Leland didn't kill Tyler. Silly ass CW relationship for Burnham. Here we go. Okay, Mike. Okay. So we're going to have a talk, man.
I know.
There is some deep-seated dislike of Burnham with anybody. And I don't know.
Issues with the CW, apparently.
Yeah, I guess. So, you know, I remember what you said last week. And, like, I think Ruthie said it really well last week, is that this is a part of her life. It's not the dominant portion of her life, so let her live that, you know? I think if she didn't have some kind of relationship going on, it would be kind of weird.
Yeah, maybe.
So, I don't know. That's just my take. I said last week, as long as it doesn't dominate her life, as long as she is not a living failure of the Bechdel test, she obviously, every communication she has is not about some dude. So you can't, I don't think what you're ascribing here is actually what's happening. I think it's okay for her to still have a relationship with Tyler, and it will be, if it is, it is a very complicated one. And especially if you've seen the next on, you'll know that it is very complicated. Because
yeah, and I don't think the CW really does complicated relationships.
No.
I don't know. Maybe it's been a while since I've seen some CW relationships. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what's wrong with the CW anyway? I'm sensing some hostility here. I'm not quite sure where that's coming from.
I agree.
Let it go. Stop watching the CW. I don't know why they hurt you so bad, but you don't have to watch them anymore. It's okay.
It's okay.
We have support groups for that. Oh my goodness. But yeah, man, quit hating on romance. I'm going to quote one of my favorite quotes from a movie, Dan in Real Life, where one teenage daughter screams at Dan that he is a murderer of love. Don't be a murderer of love, Mike from Cleveland. Oh. Yeah. Anyway. Doo-doo-doo.
All right, we got one more.
Okay, Fred from the Netherlands. I can't say it quite as fast as he can. He says it super fast. Fred from the Netherlands says, who did tie up Leland in such a manner that the AI / control could do with him what it wanted? The AI? How then? Good question. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Oh, here we're going to have some science knowledge dropped on us. Quote from Colbert, there are significant biological similarities between mothers and daughters, particularly the mitochondrial DNA. Scientific rubbish. I will explain this in my audio feedback. All right, heard it here first, folks. That is scientific rubbish.
Yes. And if anyone would know, it would be Fred.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the mitochondrial DNA discussion that we are going to have.
He's got street cred on this.
Not just street cred. He's got book learning.
Yeah. In fact, he teaches doctors. So, and is a doctor himself.
Yeah, he knows some stuff.
He knows some stuff. Props to our friend Fred.
Yeah, Fred.
Yes. All right. So our nose, what do you have?
All right. Okay. Well, I don't really have any nose per se, but I do kind of have some holder horses, I think.
All right. Well, I had a few nose, two specifically. Why would Control appear to Leland as Burnham, Pike, and Saru? Why not Giorgio, Tyler, Pitar? I just found the three that they used were not questionable, but like, okay, why not have Cornwell, for example?
Yeah.
It seemed odd that they focused on those three people. I don't think it had to be those three people. But, and I say this last thing, and believe me, do not take this as a criticism for ADHD. Okay. I am a card carrying ADHD person. Okay. So there you go.
Ooh, shiny.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So it's 2257. Have they not found a sufficient medication for ADHD? Because Tilly, that scene on the bridge, was so very ADHD. I just didn't find that that behavior was believable. I would think that Tilly, knowing that she can focus as well as she can, would not blurt out that crazy stuff about her favorite law. It just seemed so manufactured there. I mean, it was clearly what it was, and I just didn't find it any way reasonable that she would do that. So,
all right.
But the thing is, though, I will say this. A lot of people have it.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that 99% of the population has it.
And if you don't have it, there's a lot of reasons to have it. Like in other words, like you can have it effectively because of all the devices and distractions that we have in our daily lives. So even if you don't have it, like a predisposition for it, you may effectively have it just because of there being too many inputs at any one time. But
too much sensory input.
Yeah. And it is essentially a sensory input issue.
Yeah. Interesting. Honestly, I'm not sure that it can be the same as it was maybe 20 or 30 years ago because it has to do with like attention span, right?
Yeah. Well, there's multiple components of it.
Right. Well, the keyword in most of these is attention. Right. So how you pay attention, if you can pay attention, how long you pay attention, all that kind of stuff is different now than I think it was 20 or 30 years ago. And yeah, I think it does have a lot to do with what you were saying about the all the devices and screens and all that kind of stuff, which is why I think it can be not necessarily a good thing to make your iPad your babysitter.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I've heard studies.
Yeah.
Whether or not those studies are correct, I don't know. I don't have children. I have nieces and nephews, and I observe things.
Yeah. The H in ADHD is, of course, hyperactivity. And that's like the Mike Myers skit on Saturday Night Live where he's like strapped to a kid's, you know.
I love that one. It's with Nicole Kidman, right?
Yeah.
When he's strapped to a jungle gym or whatever that thing is.
Yeah, he's strapped to a jungle gym and he's got a helmet on.
You want the chocolate?
Yeah.
I love that one. Oh my gosh. Woo. That's a really, really good Saturday Night Live skit.
It is. You guys
should all go and Google it. Mike Myers, Nicole Kidman, children, something. I don't know. You'll find it. It's hilarious.
Yeah. And it's also worth saying that someone with ADHD also usually has the ability to hyper-focus on things. So it's not a lack of being able to focus. It is sometimes that the focus is easily
diverted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important to stress also if there are any younger people out there listening that ADHD is not inherently a bad thing.
Yes.
It's just something that needs to be managed. So
it's not a sentence of difficulty or whatever. It can be treated, you know, you have to try to focus.
Yeah.
A lot of very creative people have ADHD. Very creative. So,
I mean, it's the same with dyslexia. Honestly, it's not inherently a bad thing. It's just your brain processes information differently and you have to have a different way of handling it, coping with it.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to our favorite segment.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
All right. Brian from Hawaii is first. He says, not that it's very major or very easily avoidable, but it's unfortunate how the Young Burnham flashbacks keep using the same actor to portray younger versions of Michael. She looks like a teenager here, but is supposed to be 10, whereas earlier in the series, it showed her as a younger actor portraying an older Michael. I have to agree with that myself. In fact,
yeah.
I had in my Hold Your Horses, the child that was in the pilot who was at the Vulcan Learning Center looks and sounds so much younger than the girl on Doctari Alpha. So I totally agree with you 100% on this one.
I think you probably just have to chalk that up to child actors.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily a plentiful commodity.
Yeah. And about the only way that they would have been able to show this would have been if they had casted another actor in this role and made her 10, but made her like 6 or 7. Cause I don't think it was ever fully established how old she was when they were killed. At least I don't remember that being established.
I don't have any idea.
Her name is Arista Arhin.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, you know, the problem is you can't always have the same child actor. You can't only, you know, they do age as well. And then if you have try and get the same one portraying a younger age when they are in fact in real life older, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
Child actors, they're tough.
Apparently she's been in 7 episodes so far.
Yeah. Well, it could be also 7 episodes total. We just haven't seen all of them yet. We don't know.
No, actually, the one I'm looking at IMDb right now, and they're all like, there were 2 episodes from the first season, and then there's now been 5 episodes that have shown her this season.
So then she's not going to be in any more episodes.
Well,
that IMDb is aware of. Yeah. Because sometimes if you look at IMDb and it says umpteen episodes, they have them listed for future episodes.
Well, and a lot of times
FYI.
People have the ability to edit their IMDb information. Like if you have, I think it's a pro account, and people go in there and they put a whole bunch of stuff that isn't actually true. So
I don't think you have to have a pro account because I edit IMDb.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Look at that. It says contribute to this page, edit page. So
I'm pretty sure that anybody can. It's verified. The information is verified. So just because anybody can do it doesn't mean that the information isn't verified. It also means that the entire internet polices you.
Yeah.
Or all of the IMDb users. But they go in and verify stuff because I've edited things before when they're missing information. And it just so happens I'm staring at the screen right now and I'm like, oh, yes, this person is first, that person is second. Anyway. Yep. Child actors. Sorry.
Well, that's pretty much it from Brian. Let's move on to the next one.
Okie dokie. Next, we have James. His Hold Your Horses is Trechnobabble for getting Dr. Burnham permanently in our time. We take the dark matter thingamadoo and modify it with our transporter thingamadoo somehow, which will turn into like this quantum transporter hybrid thingamadoo and beam her through.
A more powerful thingamadoo.
Yeah, thingamajig. It's really convenient that we've got dark matter in the shuttle bay. Yes, that is helpful.
It is very helpful.
Yeah. Okay. And then he says, did Dr. Burnham actually cause the entire issue by putting the sphere in Discovery's path? I mean, how else would Control know about it? Its inputs were fed by existing Starfleet intel.
I had wondered that myself.
Good question. It's tough to say. Also, is Dr. Burnham Star Trek's Doctor Strange? With her, after she's got to be experiencing the different permutations of events her actions caused through time over the span of 950 years, while still retaining the knowledge of what happened before her actions. Good question. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I can't think too hard about time travel stuff. It makes my head hurt.
Well, to that end, I'll change the order of what we've got here, but LT from NC says, why is the 950 years in the future so important? Someone already said this, and maybe the hook for Calypso, but I'm still hoping for a better fleshed out why. And to that he says, well, we got our explanation for Terralysium, but it was just a little hand wavy for me. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
That for all her side eyes and suspicious looks, Giorgio still put the data tap on the crate to intercept the sphere data. She has to suspect what Leland is up to, and it isn't like his personality shift was subtle after the nanite injection.
True.
What did Leland shank Tyler with? I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell either, but something. Probably a nanite knife or something.
It was a prison shank.
Or did he literally turn into like a T-1000 and his arm turn into a blade and stab him that way?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I have to agree with the 950 years. How did she get tethered to that time? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was a malfunction from the Klingon disruptors, I guess. But
maybe.
Who knows? Or she...
How did she miscalculate so badly? She was only trying to jump back an hour, and she ended up 950 years in the future?
Yeah, and for that matter...
That's not just a typo.
Yeah, and in the wrong direction. Because she was trying to go backward in time, and she ended up going forward 950 years.
Yeah.
Not so
That's
good.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. I have a similar one, and I'm going to bring it up now. I'll go out of turn. But for that matter, an arm display that simply says 950, isn't that a bit inexact?
Mm.
What's the exact date? Like, what I would expect a star date or, you know, her to say... You know, to, I guess it would be, what would it be, 950 years, 2257, so it would be 3217? No, 3207. So it would be 3207. So I would expect, like, you know, March 12th, 3207. But we didn't get that. We just got 950 years. Like, I would expect, like, a reading like the DeLorean had.
Well, I mean, yes, except for those... I mean, we can count the revolutions of Earth around the sun, but time and date is sort of a human construct. So if there are no humans around, how can it exactly tell you an exact date if there's no one around keeping track anymore?
Oh, there's no one to, like, give a leap second or something?
Yeah, or something. I mean, how does it know? So I don't know. Maybe it just guesstimated to the best of its ability based on... something. I don't know. I always wonder how people keep time when, again, time is a relative thing to this planet. Like, do they talk about Earth's solar years? Is that what everybody goes on? Because a year here can be quite different from a year on a different planet. I mean, Everybody talks about a year as though 365 days is a year everywhere.
Yeah, I get that. That would be the question. It's like, so she went forward in time exactly 950 years to the second?
Yeah, I don't know. Or 950 years, 3 months, 12 days, and 15 minutes.
And that's what I would expect.
Something. I mean, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, it's odd that it just, to see a number like that, it just seemed kind of crazy. But, yeah.
But I mean, again, if there's no one around to tell you this is what time it is, then. How would you know? I mean, is there some grand computer in the sky that keeps track and says and always can tell and that other computers can tap into?
Star charts?
And it always says, yeah, but again, this is something that's kept track of by people. And if there aren't people around, like, what is that? There's some it's the atomic clock or whatever, right? Uh-huh. That keeps time. But the atomic clock keeps time because we want it to, right? Is it going to continue in perpetuity if there's no one around to maintenance it?
Well, in this reality, in the Star Trek Red Angel reality, would seem to be no.
So then how would any sort of anything be able to tap into anything and tell you, like, the time? You know what I mean?
I don't know.
I mean, like, you can't, because a year is... how long it takes the Earth to revolve around the sun, right?
Right.
So let's look at, I mean, a year is different for even the planets in our own solar system based on them revolving around our same sun. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm just like, how do you calculate that kind of a thing? If there's no one around to tell you, hey, this is what time it is.
Yeah. There has to be another way of determining it that doesn't revolve going around the sun. Our sun.
I'm sure that's true, but I want to know how they do that. What are they using? Because if there are so many different planets in the United Federation of Planets, What's their time standard? What's the Federation standard of time? I guess that's why they use star dates. Anyway.
All right.
That's the stuff I wonder about. Sven from Berlin says, how did Control manage to tie Leland to that thing, being just a program and holographic and all? And how exactly does it take him over? I guess struggle is pointless. Is Control's form for resistance futile? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it is a pseudonym.
Yep, that's Control's version of resistance is futile.
Not a synonym is what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. William, as Ruthie is putting in the notes, William the Irish, and you'll have to tell us where you're from so we can actually say something.
No, we're still going to call you William the Irish.
Okay. All right.
Based solely on your last name, which I'm not going to give out over the internet.
And the Facebook profile picture, which has a very Irish St. Paddy's Day hat on, it looks like. Anyway, he says, why does Dr. Burnham also call the enemy Control? Just because Discovery does doesn't mean she would it? I'd think she'd call it something like Chaos. Kidding, of course, but I wanted to get my joke in somehow.
That's funny.
Who tied Leland up? Didn't he fall down on the floor? How did he get into the thing they are holding him in? That is a very good question.
That's an excellent question that I didn't even think about. But so many people are bringing it up. I'm like, oh, hey, yeah. How did he get in that chair? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, if this was TNG and they had holodecks, we'd think, okay, well, this is just a holographic simulation. But I don't think the holograms in this century have the ability to... They just have the ability to look like people, not actually appear people. Right. I don't think that there's like a force around them, so to speak. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not like the force, but a force. A Newton force. There we go.
Mm.
So that's a good question. I don't have an answer. We have one more.
Okay. Mike from Cleveland says, Emperor Georgiou sacrifices her life for Burnham? Maybe.
It seems that way.
Kind of looks like it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It seems like for Dr. Burnham, she has seen many different permutations of life. It kind of reminds me of that Voyager episode. Is it The Year from Hell? Is that the one? He was the bad guy in RoboCop. He was in that 70s show. Well-known actor. He was the president of the Federation in Star Trek VI. Kurtwood Smith.
Kurtwood Smith.
Yes.
Love him.
Yeah.
If you had said the dad in that 70s show, I would have been all over that.
Okay.
But I'm like, there are a lot of people in that 70s show. Yeah. Kurtwood Smith. So many things. He does a good bad guy and a good grumpy old man from that 70s show.
Yes.
Anyway.
I forgot he was a Cardassian, too.
Mm.
Yes, he played Anorax.
So he was in an episode of Voyager then?
Yes, a very, very prominent one. He was Anorax of the Krenim, and they had the Krenim had that weapon that would, that temporal weapon that would change time, transform time. It would, he was trying to revive their civilization or something like that. Yeah. So he, it was like witnessing different forms of reality anyway. And reminded me a little bit of that. All right. That's it for listener. Hold your horses. What do we have for our own hold your horses? You said you had some.
Yeah. One of them was the, why 950? Why did she tether to 950 years in the future? Why was that her tether instead of 20 years in Burnham's past or whatever? Didn't really make that much sense.
Yeah.
Another one was, why would Dr. Burnham also be snapped back if she's not actually in the suit?
That is a good question.
I did not understand that at all.
And would she survive that?
Yeah, nor did I understand how she would possibly survive something. I didn't. I was like, I don't know why that would be. My final, hold your horses, I think my final one is, why did Philippa leave that thing there so that it could be reactivated? Why didn't she take it?
That's a good question.
Like, deactivate it and take it. But it seems like it was left there so that Control Elan could come along and reactivate it. Seems kind of sloppy to me.
Yep. To that, I would wonder, she did get transported onto Discovery, right?
So I think so. I don't know. Well, there was an escape pod. I'm assuming the escape pod had Tyler in it.
That was Tyler.
Or yeah, right. The escape pod had Tyler. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know.
When they beamed back for...
Oh, yeah. They beamed her back.
Yeah. Yeah. And, what else? It was something.
But still, I think she should have taken that thing, like deactivated it and taken it.
All right. Well, I have something that I would put as a hold your horses. I have two, actually. In the opening credits, Wilson Cruz's name was not there. And I checked the secondary credits as well at the end, and it wasn't there either. It must have been an oversight. And in fact, just before we recorded, I got a confirmation of this from Wilson Cruz directly responding to my tweet to him. And I asked him, I noticed your name wasn't displayed in the opening credits. Was that a mistake? I would have expected your name between Mary Wiseman and Shahzad Latif, but that space was blank. And then I also told him, love seeing you in the medical whites again, by the way. And he responded, he said, no worries, just human error. It's being rectified, if not already. Mm. So
cool.
That's cool.
Good to know.
So yeah, yeah.
And sometimes people mess up.
Yeah, but I thought it was cool. He actually responded to me directly and answered the question. Another thing, and this is kind of a real world thing again, but I have to mention it. So Kenrick Green is the actor who plays Mike Burnham. If you didn't know, Kenrick Green is Sonequa Martin Green's husband.
Oh, weird.
So basically, he's got two things there. He's got his wife's name and he's her dad. Not to mention that he's married to her mom. Yeah. So interesting kind of casting. And I don't even want to think about the DNA. reminds me of that one famous episode of the X-Files, Home, it's called, where the mother was also the wife. Mm-mm. And
Mm-mm. Nope.
Crazy stuff.
People under the stairs. Nope.
Yep.
Nope.
All right.
That episode is a big old nope. I did not like it. Creepy.
It is creepy as hell. That's why I love that episode. It's to this day, it's always there in my head. I always think of it. We'll make our own life together. All right. So now we move on to our regular feedback. So I'm going to open hailing frequencies. Okay. So our first bit of feedback is from Steve from Oklahoma.
Yay, Oklahoma.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Steve, and this is for Perpetual Infinity and for Star Trek Discovery. And I know I haven't sent anything in for a while, so it's been a great season. I've been loving it. I've been loving you guys' podcast. You're doing great. And I just wanted to send a couple of real quick thoughts on my first watch of the episode so they get in there. And the first thing is as viewers, we all knew that that this wasn't going to end right now because we've got, what, three more episodes left. So we knew it wasn't going to get solved here. It is unfortunate that Michael had to lose her mother again. And maybe she'll get her back. I'm not sure. You know, we'll see going forward. But it was really, really intriguing. I liked the idea of someone trying to use the time stream and failing. Because that's basically what she's done, right? For like 840 something tries, she's failed at whatever she was trying to do. And so I'm excited to see next week, see what happens. I really liked that we had the misdirect with Leland, that they made us kind of think maybe he was not the Trojan horse, but then we find out that he is the Trojan horse. That's not Burnham's mom that is a Trojan horse. So that was kind of cool. And I'm just excited to see going forward what's going to happen. And I want to thank you guys for your podcast, and I love every minute of it. Talk to you later.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. And for that, of course, you get... Again, thank you so much for your feedback. Steve, I also, of course, want to thank you for subbing in for Mark this week on The Walking Dead Talk Through. You did a great job, and we'll hope to have you back. And we'll have you back on the next roundtable, hopefully. So,
yeah.
All right. So Steve actually added something on Facebook, so a point that he didn't make here. He said, it makes sense that the DNA would be similar to both Michael and her mother. Also, because of time travel, her body could still be found by Leland in the past. That actually makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
And I wonder if Leland actually does see her mom, like whether she actually comes back somehow, and that's where she ends up dying.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Because time travel.
Yes, and this idea of failure reminds me of my time travel script that I've been threatening to write for many years. That is, of course, the Joseph, who is a priest and a professor at the University of Notre Dame, invents a time travel device, and after going back to witness the birth of Jesus, finds out that he is Joseph.
That Joseph.
Yes. And he only finds that out after hundreds of attempts to try to find the birth of Jesus. So, anyway.
Interesting.
Yes, and I've now so anyone who takes that idea and goes with it, I'll sue you. All right. Well, do you have anything you want to say about Steve's feedback, or we'll just move into Mark's?
No, just that it was great. Thanks.
Yeah, and thanks for the kind words as well.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. All right. And we have our next voicemail. And returning to the podcast, I'm very happy to say, is Mark.
Yay.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for Perpetual Infinity. I give this episode 8.5 doctors reinstated 5 minutes ago. Let me quickly go through my yeses and nos. Yeses, Sinequa's performance was really good. Spock-like science, I like that. Michael's mother telling her that she was there at all these important moments in her life was very touching. I like the idea of having control as a big bad for the season. And an honorary yes to Fred's photos. Fred, you're doing an amazing job with those. I may even recruit you when The Expanse comes back. Now, as for my nose, a spy device that actually makes noise when you turn it on and off. When are spies going to realize that that goes against everything that they're trying to do? Another no is when they figured out that the transmission was being intercepted by Section 31. And they said that they couldn't stop the interception? Sure they could. Just cut off the transmission. I mean, yeah, they wouldn't have been able to upload it to the suit, but it would have stopped Section 31 and Control from getting it. Another no was the whole Control taking over Leland's body. I know the Borg do it, but this was an AI created by Starfleet, and now you're telling me that the AI has evolved enough to be able to take over a human body? I didn't buy that. And my final no was, where was Admiral Cornwall? We know she's on Discovery, and yet with all the important stuff happening this episode, she was nowhere to be seen. Okay, on to the episode. I really like the idea of uploading the sphere data to the suit and sending it into the future, out of Control's reach. But I ultimately knew that it wouldn't work. But at least not all is lost. Here's how I think the rest of the season will play out. So first they tried deleting the data, but somehow the data is self-aware and put up measures to prevent its deletion. So they moved on to option 2, upload the data to the suit and send it to the future. This would preserve it, so the self-aware data would be okay with this plan. But ultimately, I knew it would fail. Which means they now have to move on to an option 3. And I think that'll be to destroy the hard drives or storage crystals or whatever the data is stored in. I think this will be their next move. Sure, it would cause a lot of damage to Discovery, but it would be worth it to keep the data out of Control's hands. Unfortunately, the data will find a way to prevent this from happening in order to protect itself. On to option 4, scuttle the ship. When all else fails, turn on the self-destruct and abandon the ship. But this too will fail, since the data will find a way to override any self-destruct orders, keeping Discovery safe no matter what they try. In the end, there'll be no way for them to destroy the data on Discovery. But then how do you keep it out of Control's hands? Well, we know that the data is okay with itself being sent into the future in the suit, and since we know the data can't be removed from Discovery, that leaves us with option 5, Calypso. In that short trek, Discovery had been abandoned by its crew in order to maintain position, drifting in space for 1,000 years. What if that 1,000 years was actually after being sent into the future 950 years? In Calypso, Zora, the computer, says she spent most of her time evolving herself. She definitely displayed emotions. A normal computer, even one as advanced as a Starship computer, couldn't do that. But a computer containing the Sphere data probably could. So I think the Discovery crew will find a way to use the time tether that we found out about in this episode, latch it onto Discovery, and somehow pull the ship 950 years into the future with orders to maintain its position. In the process, they may even get Michael's mother back. That part I don't know. It will also end the reason for Pike being captain of Discovery, since this threat will be over. I predict this will happen at the end of the season, and then season 3 will begin with the crew on a newly commissioned Discovery, the NCC 1031-B. Now, this would also have the added benefit of explaining the absence of the Spore Drive in future Star Treks, since to protect the Sphere data and to stop Control trying to get it, they will spread the news that Discovery was destroyed and the data lost. The true story of what happened to Discovery will be kept secret, and by association, so will the Spore Drive, since we know it has the ability to time travel, as we saw when it came back from the Mirror Universe. So there you have it, what I think will play out over the rest of the season, and how next season we will have new adventures with a new captain aboard a newly commissioned Starship Discovery. That's it for me. Mark out.
Very interesting, to say the least.
I agree. I think that we're going to have a new Discovery, and that's how we ended up with Zora.
Yeah.
Calypso.
Yeah, and the point about it, so essentially what we thought was 33rd century in Calypso is actually 43rd century in Calypso. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting indeed. And of course, again, thank you so much, Mark, and we're glad to have you back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while, so... As usual, you bring up some great points. And I will ask you one question. You mentioned the NCC 1031B. What happened to the 1031A? I tend to think
that's going to be sent into the future?
Well, no, because that's not the A. That's just the 1031. So, because, you know, the Enterprise becomes the Enterprise A.
Well, they don't call it A because they don't know that it's A until there's a B.
Okay.
I mean, I would assume.
Well, in Star Trek 4, the NCC 1701A isn't the 1701. It's a different ship. So.
Well, I don't know then.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm thinking you mean the A. Not to pick nits, but that's what I think you meant. I would say recruit away. And if Fred is willing to do that for the Expanse and for Killjoys, have at it. I wonder.
Or just the Expanse.
What's that?
I said, or just the Expanse. He didn't say anything about Killjoys. We're volunteering Fred for everything. But Fred needs to get some sleep and take care of himself.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Fred, this is your stern warning.
Yes. You've been, I think you've been burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah. I'm burning the midnight oil.
Yeah.
Burning something. Something is burning. That's all I know.
I would agree with the a couple of points that you made about how could it take control of a human body. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that Control is able to do this, and then when Control will eventually be destroyed, that technology can't be replicated again anywhere near until 24th century. So...
I kind of thought that part of the AI had already traveled back in time and infected Control, and that's how Control had more abilities than we would have thought maybe it should.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a question to wonder, you know, chicken or the egg kind of kind of situation here. Like what?
Yeah.
What caused
control? Time travel.
Yeah. Well, it seems that way.
That's so hard.
It does seem that way.
And I would think that the reason why Dr. Burnham calls it control is because she's been watching everybody call it control for so long. So she just calls it control too, I guess. I don't know. Someone said that.
The idea of being able to physically destroy the control, basically the sphere data, that's true, except the sphere data, if it does have the ability to like protect itself, it probably also has the ability to replicate itself. So it could. This is the problem that you have when it comes to virtual data, like bits and bytes. It's very difficult to destroy that data because it could be replicated so easily. So,
yeah,
you know, so if you can isolate it to one physical
location,
data rod, as they like to use in Star Trek or whatever. Isolinear rod or disc or whatever, tapes, I remember from TOS. Mm-hmm. If it can be isolated to one physical thing, then yes, but I would have my doubts that it could be. So
I guess it's isolated to one physical thing being it's isolated to the Discovery in Mark's plan.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me.
There's also an assumption here. Like at the end, Control was able to get 54% of the sphere data. Well, that assumes that 100% of the sphere data is pertinent to Control. It doesn't work that way. Like it may be just a portion of the data that it actually needs. They effectively may only need, say, 1% of the data. So I think making it simply be 54%, it seems like I would think that not every byte is as important as the other.
Yeah.
So that's my point. Like you can, if you have the right percent, the right bytes, you could get everything that you needed. So there's a bit of an oversimplicity going on with the writers here. So,
or maybe it could be that the file is such that you can't read it unless you have the whole thing.
That is true.
Maybe.
That's true.
But I remembered what I was going to say when Mark was talking about they don't know how to stop the Section 31 ship from getting the data. Mm-hmm. And he said they just had to stop the transfer. That's true. If they had stopped the transfer, then they would have stopped them from getting the data. And that's another thing, though, with this whole stopping and starting of stuff and things. How are they getting the whole bit into one place? Because it seems like part of it has been transferred, and so they're doing the transfer, and the Section 31 ship takes over part of the transfer and then doesn't, and then it goes back to the suit, and then the other, I mean, how does anybody know that the whole thing is getting transferred anywhere?
Well, it's using Google Drive or
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's just, you know, whether or not it shows up on Dropbox, then you know. or iDrive or whatever. OneDrive.
Because usually when I'm doing transfers, if it gets interrupted for whatever reason, whether or not the transfer is being taken over by another entity or something, I usually have to start over.
Unless you have a download manager.
Yeah. That's true. So yeah. Are they using Napster then? Is that what's going on?
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Sean Fanning was involved with Control.
Oh my goodness. I only thought of Napster because that was a joke on The Magicians an episode or two ago. So it was really funny.
Star Trek Napster. That'll be the title of the Section 31 series.
Oh my gosh. Woo, that's funny.
Yeah.
Good times.
All right. So let's move on. Unless you have anything else.
I don't think so.
Okay. Let's move on to our next bit of feedback with an explanation you'll hear. Todd.
Hey, Thicket Dweller here. I just wanted to say that I'm giving this particular episode, Perpetual Infinity, a 9.5. And the main reason I have any detraction to it is really the same as everybody else. Where's Jet Reno? I really seem to be focusing on the idea that somehow the center of this story and the Star Trek universe at this time is now Burnham. It seems from the statements her mother has made that Spock's reach out to her in the forest was the beginning of this story, but somehow intersects with the Kelvin timeline. Anyway, thanks. Have a great day. P.S. Thicket Dweller is what Todd means in Old English.
I had no idea that Todd was Thicket Dweller in Old English.
That is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and how was Old English so succinct?
I don't know.
Anyway, so I thought that was good feedback. And as far as Jet Reno, more on this later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. So next, now you will hear some interesting things in this bit of voicemail. And that's because Fred, because he gives us all images, he also has access to the voicemails.
Nice.
So he went in there, he listened to Mark's voicemail, and he responded in his voicemail. So, yeah. So anyway, here is Fred's.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 11. I like the episode. I give it 7.5. Michael cried beautifully, but way too much. My grade is actually reflecting one of my notes, and that is that in this episode, Michael is standing there at the containment field where her mother is in, and she is constantly in a kind of dilemma between not wanting to lose her again and to let her go. And she's crying and saying, I don't want to let you go, but I have to. I don't want to let you go, but I have to. And crying. And actually, this was quite similar to the scene 2 episodes ago with Arium. So that was too similar for me. I want to thank Mark for his compliments about the screenshots. And Mark, perhaps we can indeed make a deal for the Expanse or even Killjoys. One of the biggest notes I had in this episode was the scientific rubbish that Culber getting out of his mouth. He said, there are scientific biological similarities between mothers and daughters, especially the mitochondrial DNA. That's true, but the same significant biological similarities, if you're talking about mitochondrial DNA, are between mothers and sons. So this is not a mother-daughter specific thing. And your mitochondrial DNA is only a fraction of your DNA. And for your chromosomal DNA, which is the fastest amount of the DNA you have, you only are for 50% similar to your mother. So on the DNA basis, is silly. And on the other hand, if you look at neurological patterns, so brain waves, et cetera, because children and parents are so different, so at least for 50%, I don't think these biological patterns are able to be so similar that you confuse a mother from a daughter. So, scientific rubbish. What I always thought is that somebody just got the biomarkers from Michael when she was younger, and they just put it in this file, whoever stole her biological data, whatever. And I think when they are stationed in a Section 31 station, they are completely biologically screened when they get her appointment there, including their children. So Section 31 could easily have Michael's biological patterns and put that in the file, although the Red Angel was her mother. So another no was, who did restrain or tie up, I don't know if what's the right English word, Leland there, so that the AI could invade him? Who did that? The AI? With which hands? Holograms, whatever. Okay, that was all for now. I'm going to do my screenshot work now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, of course, Fred, Of course, we have to give you a big thank you for all you're doing for us. Clearly, you're kicking butt. And like Ruthie said earlier, take care of yourself, man. Don't do too much. Now, of course she's crying, Fred.
I mean, it's her mother.
Yeah. And this literally was the defining point in her life. Everything, you know, and she's had multiple defining points in her life, but everything that happened after it was this moment in her life, the moment that her parents were killed by Klingons, or so she thinks. And it is so unexpected for her 20 years later to meet up with her mom. Now, by the way, does that mean that Michael Burnham's 30? Mm-hmm. Which I guess would make Spock about 26, I think. Mm. And anyway, worth thought about. But I would expect her to cry. And this would be like literally so much that has defined Michael Burnham in this life. These two seasons have either been changed or wasn't true. I mean, she blamed herself for her parents being there and getting killed in the process. And that wasn't her. That was Section 31. And it wasn't just so many things going on. Her mother didn't die after all. And same with Spock, by the way. Like, he knows why Dr. Gabriel Burnham chose Spock. It was because of his dyslexia, of all things, or whatever it's called in Vulcan, which I don't quite understand how that gives him the ability to be able to sense it, but I'll take it as, I'll take her word for it.
And brain processes information differently.
Okay.
I don't know.
Fair enough. I think it's as simple as that, actually. That's the simplest explanation. I think that's the correct one. All right, so we have one more, and that is from Cyberman.
Hey, Brian and Ruthie. This is Cyberman. I'm actually going to talk about Episode 11, Perpetual Infinity. But prior to that, I have to say, when I was listening to your Project Daedalus podcast, you guys made me laugh out loud, and I was on the way to work, so I really appreciate that, because laughter before work is a really good thing. And then on the way home in traffic, made me laugh again when I was finishing the episode up. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But anyway, this is Episode 11, Perpetual Infinity. I have to give this 8 poor Lelands. That's my rating. My yeses were, you know, the acting was amazing. My yes was in sick bay, especially when Spock came in, and he came in with all the data logs from her mom's time travel, because he knew he had to give Burnham something to do, because she's very rebellious, and they all knew they had to talk to her, because this is a big moment. So I thought that was a great scene. But the thing that brought me out of it, and the reason it's an 8, is because when Control was down on ESA 4 and Michelle Yeoh was fighting with him, I don't think Nan, the security officer, did enough. She should have drained that phaser. And if the phaser's not working, this is the time for a projectile weapon. And I kept thinking to myself, oh my God, they need Oliver. They need the green arrow, because they need an arrow in that guy's head. Now, if it wasn't working, then she should have picked up a pipe and helped her, because that's all I was yelling at the screen. I was like, help her, help her. So that brought me way out of the episode. Other than that, I did not expect it to go in this direction. I found it all pretty interesting. And, you know, poor Tyler, man. He's having a hard time. But I thought it was really good. So anyway, 8. Have a great week. Thanks, guys.
And, of course, Cyberman. Yeah, thank you so much. And we really appreciate, by the way, you telling us about how much you enjoyed the Project Daedalus episode. We thought it was great, too. So it was a lot of fun to record. The longest recording of my podcast career. You mentioned, I never watched this show, but Arrow, I had to think of Daryl Dixon or Hawkeye. But yeah, I think that was kind of the idea with Giorgio. But yeah, I think about the only way you could take down Control Leland, as James called him, would be to physically take him down. I don't think an energy weapon is going to work. It would have to be some kind of stabby. But even then, I don't know if that would work either, simply because we saw Leland literally get shot in and make essentially a wound that would have gone right through him, and it just sealed him up. So it's interesting, to say the least. But anyway, thank you so much, Cyberman. Unless you have any objections, let's move on to the written feedback. Nope. You want to read James?
All right. James says, overall, this episode was great. The scenes between Michael and her mother were superb. She's brought back to her childhood seeing her mother and wants nothing more than to have her back and remain that security of having her in her life that she lost those 20 years ago. The further development of Giorgio and the real motherly love that she has for Burnham is really showing through. I think all doubts of her ever lying to or playing Michael should be quelled. She's not lying or manipulating her. It seems Michael is her one love besides power and could be her only weakness. I also do like that we got explanation as to what was going on with the eye thingamadoo on and Leland. But was the needle, like, replicated into the scanner by control or something? I mean, because why would you purposely put an eye needle in the retinal scanner in the first place? I mean, in case of emergency, here's an eye needle. I still can't figure that one out. Oh, well, that's something I guess the writers just choose to insert for reasons and to be gross. Man, Tyler is like this show's punching bag. Dude can't catch a break. He's either having Klingons grafted to him, getting blamed for everything that goes wrong, having a completely dysfunctional relationship with Michael, having to give up his kid, using too much conditioner in his hair, or getting stabbed by Control Leland. Oh my gosh, give the poor guy a break. By the way, did anyone else get the feeling of Spock giving us almost like a slight fourth wall break with the I like science line? To me, it almost looked like his eyes diverted ever so slightly to the camera away from the conversation and give that quick little grin to us watching.
Ferris
I don't
Bueller.
Know. Just a feeling I had with that one. And not a bad one. If it was on purpose, I really liked it. Can't wait to hear from everyone or next week.
Well, thank you so much, James. And worth saying, James helps out by collecting all your feedback and putting it in the doc that we use to do these podcasts.
Yes. Thank you, James.
Yes. Because it's difficult, especially when we're trying to collect them all in one day. And I don't know about you, Ruthie, but my Fridays are pretty busy at work. So.
Yes. I like that. In case of emergency, here's an eye needle.
I have to think that Control put those eye needles there. That wasn't
they
something
somehow
that was there.
Did that, I'm sure, but how did Control do that?
That
I don't
is
know.
A good question, which I have no answer for at this point.
Yeah,
but ever since that was mentioned, I had to go, that's a good point. That's know, a very right? good point. I don't have an answer.
I don't think I would ever want any kind of needle close to my eyeball.
No.
Ever.
And if you kind of balk at going to your optometrist after this, I yeah. can understand.
No kidding. Wait, you want to do what? No, thank you.
Yeah.
Can I pass, please?
Or a LASIK eye surgery.
Oh, gosh. Where they actually slice part of your eye off? But they use a laser, not an actual needle, so that's nice.
Yeah. I wonder how or why he survived that. I guess Control in their nanoprobes, whatever, or something in the eye needle did that?
I don't know, but it seemed like it stabbed into his brain.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how much space is between your actual eyeball and your brain, but I don't think it's that much. And it's not like your eye really gives that much resistance. Really? I mean, your eyeball is basically a sack of fluid.
Yep. I don't
That's
know.
Crazy. I don't know how he survived, but I was like, wow, he's still alive. Interesting. I don't know. I feel like they are kind of taking a lot of liberties with this AI and giving the AI kind of a carte blanche that maybe they need to dial back a little bit, because
yeah.
it seems like this AI has a lot of abilities that are not necessarily inherent to an AI, like
the ability to manipulate matter.
And tying people up.
Yeah. Yeah, like, how does, well, if it can replicate stuff, I guess.
That's a different TV show.
I don't know. That is worth thinking about, though.
Yeah. I feel like they need to calm down a little bit, writers, that is.
Well, I tend to think that they don't need to calm down. What needs to happen is the control needs to go away and never come back. And
that's a different TV show, too. Actually, it's a movie.
I just happen to think that it'll just be that whatever knowledge that control has will die with control when control eventually dies, because it has to, because we know the future.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, that needs to happen too, but still, in the interim, they need to slow their roll a little bit. Of course, it's too late now. They've all already been written and filmed.
Yeah. Yeah, but you definitely bring up a good point with that, I would say. All right, so our next is from Sven from Berlin.
Sven from Berlin. I love that rhymes.
Yeah. All in all, I can't see why some people consider this to be no Star Trek. Amen to that, Sven. Amen.
Mm-hmm.
This season proves that there are many more stories to tell and that there can be a new and original Star Trek. Life is good to us. Live long, guys. Sven from Berlin. Well put, Sven. I wholeheartedly agree. And, yeah, we talked about it last week. We thought that season one was great. Season one doesn't hold a candle to season two at this point. As much as I love season one, it wasn't the Star Trek that we grew up with. This feels much more like the Star Trek that we grew up with in long form and updated visually and everything else, but still very respectful of the Star Trek that we know. And I love it. It's been a fantastic season. It's kind of sad that we only have 3 episodes left.
Yeah.
You know, and then who knows? It's probably going to be 2020 before we get any new Star Trek Discovery. Although we will certainly be getting the Picard series before that. So,
yep.
That said.
All right, cool. And yes, I agree with all that stuff that you just said. Now we have Mike from Cleveland who says, Michelle Yeoh is simply awesome in her fight with Leland and her conversation with Mama Burnham. I'm thinking if the Section 31 show is going to focus on her specifically, it's going to be more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.-like than traditional Star Trek, and I'm all in. Is Leland some kind of Borg offspring now? Not enough Spock-Burnham interactions this episode for me, but I'm guessing I was supposed to be more engaged by the mother-daughter stuff, but it didn't really work for me. Interesting, the red dots aren't from the Red Angel. I'm thinking maybe a trap by Control. I do have one question. They tell us Control is trying to gain consciousness, but it seems pretty much self-aware and alive to me already. What am I missing? I don't know. This is kind of why I think that there is a part of Control that traveled back from the future or something already, and that it needs to
meet up with itself.
Yeah, it needs to make itself self-aware or else it won't be self-aware in the future and it can't travel back. I don't know. Again, time travel makes my head hurt.
Yeah, like I said earlier, there is a bit of a chicken the egg kind of thing. Like, what made Control, you know, go into this whole Skynet type of thing?
Yeah,
Skynet, you know, scenario thing. What caused that? And why didn't they know about Skynet?
Yeah. Why didn't they know?
They should have known. But
they should have known.
Simply go into the works of the 80s and 90s and they would have the answer.
Yeah.
Written works, well, I should say the theatrical works of 1984, 1991, etc. They would have all the answers they need. Although Control would probably sound like, I'll be back. Or should I say, and this isn't the right movie, but it is still appropriate.
Get to the chopper!
Oh my gosh. Woo, that's funny. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like the AI is pretty already self-aware too. So, I mean, I'm really enjoying all of these episodes, but I think there are a lot of loose ends that need tying.
I would agree with that. I want to know what they know. It seems I had a similar thought as you. I had wondered, isn't it already self-aware? I mean, it seems to be. What is it missing? You know, what's in the 46% that it doesn't have at this point. And it didn't even have it at the start. It seemed self-aware at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I mean, I guess maybe there's a difference between being self-aware and being an artificial intelligence or something, but I don't know. This whole thing is, I mean, the whole idea about, and what, there's some test that all...
Turing test?
Yeah, that all AI needs to pass in order to prove that it is, in fact, I guess, self-aware. Because certain computers or artificial intelligences or what have you, being supremely advanced and complex and all that kind of stuff, have the ability to mimic self-awareness, I suppose. So
yeah.
How can you actually prove that something is self-aware? So maybe control is at the point where it's intelligent and complex and has the awareness of self-preservation, but maybe not a fully fledged, I don't know, thing, person, entity, awareness, however you want to.
I don't know.
Life. I mean, they kind of went into it a little bit, and by a little bit, I mean a lot, in, I cannot remember the name of that movie right now off the top of my head.
Is it the one with Scarlett Johansson as the...
No.
Okay.
But I know all of
Ex Machina?
Yes, thank you, Ex Machina.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's very interesting. It probably requires a second watch from me because there were some things that I was like, what? But it's really, it's very interesting, and it deals specifically with artificial intelligence, I believe. Huh. And yeah, it's crazy. It's cool. It's interesting.
Yeah, the one I was thinking of, I think, is called Her.
Yeah, that's different, I think.
Yeah. As far as what that Section 31 show is going to turn into, I would think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would be a good one to think of. Something like Mission Impossible, maybe, or Alias.
Yeah, who knows?
We won't know, but...
I think it'll be interesting, though.
I think so, too. Yeah. Okay, so now we're up to our own notes. So, Ruthie, what do you have?
Not much. Do you have they already told us the purpose behind the wings?
I think it's to keep the wormhole open enough, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense. The funny thing is the Red Angel's not red. It's like a dark color, like a charcoal or something.
Yeah, but it's red on the light spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it emanates, the light that comes from it is red, but the actual, like, suit isn't red. I thought that was interesting. Uh-huh. Okay, so I had a few things we haven't discussed yet.
Okay.
Dr. Burnham mentions all sentient life in the galaxy, but her examples are all Federation worlds. Didn't mention the Klingons or Romulans or, you know, Borg. Not that she would know about the Borg, but... Non-Federation worlds were not mentioned. And clearly, if she's gone 950 years in the future, I would think that she would have come across some in her time-traveling craziness. So, if Dr. Gabriel Burnham knows nothing about the seven signals, who's creating them?
I don't know. I think someone mentioned something about it being a trap set by control.
Maybe. You mean...
It's a trap!
Yep, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and it was mentioned last week about the dishes that are in that force field, whatever you want to call it, that's keeping Dr. Burnham in the present, however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Those dishes... There was a flashback there where we see Burnham arrive on the Shenzhou, and clearly those are the same dishes. I mean, you see them in the transporter room, and then literally the next tenth of a second, they're showing up in the background. on ESOF 4. So,
oh man.
Yeah. And it's okay. You know, it's one of those things that I just wish that they would have made them look a little different because they look exactly the same.
I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention.
Yeah. If you go back, you will, it's when Dr. Burnham is telling Michael that she's seen her, you know, graduate and seen her. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember seeing it.
Yeah. That's anyway. Leland shoots the suit and appears to damage it with that mega phaser he has. So if that happened, what happened to the suit, and did it damage the time crystal or something else?
I think that's what they said.
Yeah.
I think they said it damaged the time crystal. I thought.
I wonder what that would mean. Does that mean that she's unable to transport, to go back in time again? Is she stuck 950 years in the future?
If she survived, she's not in the suit. I still don't understand how she herself gets snapped back if she's not in the suit.
And did she survive that? Yeah. I had similar thoughts.
I mean, I don't know. When she first arrived in the future, she was in outer space. So.
Yeah.
Did she get snapped? Does she always get snapped back to that moment in time? And if so, she did.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
I don't know either.
Unclear. I think. I feel like I need to be all, Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
Yeah. I wonder if we're going to see that event return, like from the vantage point of either the Klingons or Leland or both.
I don't know.
All right. Well, that's it for my other thoughts. So let's move on with our shipwide announcements. I already mentioned one thing I had in the shipwide announcements, but this week's episode of The Ready Room features Shahzad Latif in it. So it was interesting discussion as well. Some news. So Star Trek Discovery's Sinequa Martin Green joins LeBron James in Space Jam 2.
Wow.
Yeah. So she will be playing his wife in the pick. Production will be getting underway this summer during James's NBA offseason. So, in other words, the NBA season ends in June. And so they're, I guess, shooting that like June, July, August, maybe September, and they'll be done with it. So I would think that this means nothing as far as this show. You know, assuming that Michael Burnham survives season two, I would have to think that she is. She's too central to this show for them to kill her off. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about this at all. So the Well Pod, Anson Mount has his own podcast called The Well Pod. And this week's episode is an interview with Doug Jones.
Ooh.
And he recently did another one with Ethan Peck, so it's worth note. So he did a two-part couple of episodes with Ethan Peck. So anyway, he talks with Doug Jones about his career and the development of Saru. So I haven't listened to this yet. I don't really have any opinions on it, but I have heard from multiple people that have listened that it's pretty good listening to. So
cool.
All right. So, Ruthie, that is it for our announcements. So let's tell people how they can contact us.
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can submit text or audio, or you can use the speak pipe widget.
The pee pipe.
It's the peace pipe.
Yeah, the peace
pipe. It's on the internet now. You can use the speak pipe widget to give us audio feedback as well. You can also give us audio feedback by calling the voicemail, which is 304-837-2278. You can use our email address, StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. You can send us written feedback that way, or you can attach an audio file. Or You can give us written feedback by posting in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. And you can also tweet us at StarTrekGSM is where we are on Twitter. And you can also find us on the TV Time app. You can leave us feedback there by commenting on the post.
There are many ways to support us. Best way is to subscribe to us in the podcast client of choice. If you use Apple Podcasts, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. And we would like to thank, and I don't know if I'm going to get this pronounced correctly, but Ethyland for their 5-star iTunes Australia review.
Wow.
So, thank you so much. If you see that we've posted, make sure to share and retweet us and help get the word out for us. And if you use any other podcast client, you know, like Stitcher or another one is Podcast Republic, if it has a place to give a rating or review, please go ahead, give us a rating, give us a review. That always helps anyone for finding us. Other ways you can support us, and of course the network, can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And I mentioned it earlier, but I've been, of course, doing the Walking Dead talk through this past season. We are, at the time this came out, episode 97 is out, discussing season 9, episode 15, The Calm Before. By the time you hear this episode, the last, the season finale for The Walking Dead season 9 will have probably aired, and we'll be recording that later next week. So as far as the next episode, we know that it's episode 12, season 2, episode 12, titled We Don't Know. Mm-hmm. Written by I Have No Idea and directed by Who Knows. And the description is I don't know either. So we've got very little about this episode, but we do know one thing, and that is who showed up on a Stephen Colbert show was none other than Tig Notaro.
Yay.
She was on earlier this week, and she brought in a clip from Star Trek Discovery, and guess what? It had Colbert in it, and if you recall, Colbert was not even alive when she was on the first two episodes. So you know what that means, don't you?
Ooh.
That means
it's a future episode.
She's back. And I guess we should also say, all right. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.